Okay, well, I can't say for sure about any of you, but I am neither a tower builder nor a war-waging king. But if in today's passage Jesus had also said, "Or which of you, intending to grill hamburgers and hot dogs for a Labor Day cookout, does not check the level of gas in your propane tank before placing the hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill?" Well, I would have to say, I don't always, as my kids and my friend Holly, who was here last weekend visiting, would unfortunately wholeheartedly affirm. Thankfully, when that happened last Monday, we were at home, and so we just were able to fry them up on the stove. I do not always think things through thoroughly before jumping right in. I tend to be something of an act first, think later kind of person. So when I read today's passage for the first time, I was struck initially by that part. And I thought, wow, it sort of seems like Jesus could have been talking to me with what he's saying, talking about people who make rash decisions, people who make rushed decisions, people who make decisions without carefully and completely thinking them through. People who make decisions based on weighing the presumed benefits more heavily than any anticipated costs. Those are people like me, for sure. But then I thought, does Jesus really only want people who are logical and rational, who carefully and calmly weigh the pros and cons and make an educated decision based on the cost-benefit analysis? If that's the case, then that's kind of bad news for me. If that's the case, then can I not call myself a disciple of Jesus? Then I thought, that's not the Jesus that I think I know. So I looked back at the text. It only got worse. Because as you recall, immediately before his parables of the tower builder and the war-waging king, Jesus said this: "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even life itself, cannot be my disciple." More bad news for me. I absolutely do not hate my father or my mother or my children or my brother or my sister or my life. In fact, I've caught myself saying to a few friends just in the last couple of weeks, I love my life. And you all, by the way, have something to do with that. But there's no hating of people whom I hold most dear, nor is there hating of my life. Can I still then not consider myself a disciple of Jesus? Before I was ready to totally give up, I looked back again at the text, and there was more bad news. Immediately after the parables of the tower builder and the war-waging king, you may recall that Jesus said, "So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." My possessions may not be all that numerous, nor all that valuable, but I am not really prepared to give them all up. I was feeling like I had just struck out. I don't always think things through, strike one. I don't hate my family or my life, strike two. I have not given up, nor am I willing to give up all of my possessions. Strike three, I am out. If I can't even call myself a disciple of Jesus based on his own criteria, not anyone else's, should I really be standing up here doing what I'm doing? And what about all of you? Is there anyone here this morning who can meet all three of those criteria? Who first always carefully and thoroughly thinks things through? And I can believe that there are some of you here who do that, but who also then hates your family and or your life, and who also has given up or is at least willing to give up all of your possessions. If there's anyone here that meets those three criteria, you and I should probably trade places. But if not, what is that saying about us? What is that saying about our commitment to our faith. What is that saying about our commitment to Jesus? Should we all just pack it up and go home? When it was 9:13 this morning and there were about four people in the sanctuary, I started to wonder if that's what people were doing. Should we just call it quits and start staying at home on Sunday mornings in our pajamas, making pancakes, sipping coffee, and reading the Sunday comics? That might not necessarily sound all bad sometimes. But somehow I don't think that's the answer. And I don't think that's what Jesus was getting at in saying what he said in today's passage. It can't be. For one thing, Jesus' core message was about love, not hate. He preached and taught and lived a message that demonstrated love in the face of hate, love in the face of persecution, love in response to rejection and betrayal and hostility. Jesus did not preach or teach or demonstrate or tolerate hatred of any sort, ever. In today's passage, therefore, he is not telling us that we must hate, like we think of hate, those nearest and dearest to us. He's telling us, I believe, to love them, but to hold on to them loosely. He's telling us to love them, but to know that they are most beloved and cherished. Even they are not the absolute highest good. He's telling us, I believe, to love them, but to love God a little more. And the same goes for our possessions. I don't think Jesus was demanding that anyone who wants to be his follower, his disciple, absolutely must sell everything before he or she follows him. I do think he was demanding a higher place, a higher ranking, if you will, than those possessions in that person's life. I do think he was demanding a loyalty greater to him that was greater than that person's loyalty to his or her possessions. I do think he was demanding that if it came down to it, the person would choose Jesus and his way over his or her possessions. Love them, but hold on to them loosely. Love them, but know they are not the absolute highest good. Love them, but love God a little bit more. So at this point in his ministry, Jesus had crowds with him just about everywhere he went. People had heard about the healings he had done and perhaps had even witnessed or even experienced a healing themselves. People had heard about the feeding of the thousands with only a few fish and a little bit of bread and perhaps had even been there to be fed. People had heard of him teaching in the synagogues. Perhaps they had even heard him teach, whether in a synagogue or on a hillside, or maybe from a boat pushed out just a little way from the shore. People had heard about the verbal sparring he had done with the Pharisees and other religious leaders. Perhaps had even witnessed that themselves, and perhaps had been amazed at the truth he spoke and at the anger that that truth invoked. At this point, people knew about Jesus. They wanted to be closer to him. They wanted to be healed and to be fed and empowered and freed by him. Or they thought they did. Perhaps they thought that they would be simply by being close to him, simply by being close enough to him so that it looked like or even kind of felt like to them that they were part of his group. They were among his followers, simply by walking along the road with him. But unlike my kids and others these days, with any of a number of social media accounts, whether Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or Twitter, Jesus was not invested in how many followers he had. Jesus was not at all interested in the quantity of his followers. He was completely invested, on the other hand, in the quality of his followers. Jesus wasn't interested in how many people were walking down the road with him. He wanted to know how far people were willing to go for him. He knew that his message of radical love could heal and nourish and empower and free people. But he also knew that that message of radical love infuriated and threatened and scared and enraged people. He knew that the way of radical love that he embodied and offered, that radical love that was based in the reality of a loving, forgiving, healing God, whose love is available to all who seek after it, whose love is not contingent on right behavior or right belief, whose love is more powerful than any earthly ruler or even death. Jesus knew that that radical love was both intoxicating to those who sought it and enraging to those who not only absolutely did not want it for themselves, but also didn't want anyone else to have it. Jesus knew that anyone who wanted to learn his way, who wanted to learn to live from within that radical love, would not have an easy time of it, because it would change them. And as it changed them, it would change how they lived their lives, and it would necessarily change the world around them. And that's not always a welcome thing. And in fact, it can be a very threatening thing, particularly to those who don't think that the world needs changing. And so I believe he wanted to make sure that they knew that being his follower was not simply a matter of standing close to him. It was a decision to stand with him no matter what. Jesus wanted to make sure that they knew that learning this way of radical love required more than simply deciding on the spur of the moment to walk down the road with him for a while until things got too complicated or too inconvenient. Becoming his disciple and really learning this way of sacrificial love meant deliberately and repeatedly choosing to journey through life with him, even when things got complicated and inconvenient, which they no doubt would. I believe that Jesus wanted to make sure they knew they needed to be fully committed to him and his way, committed to the reality of God's love above all else. So I'm going to paraphrase the text from today. I think Jesus was saying, love those nearest and dearest to you, but love God a little bit more. Enjoy your possessions, but know they are not the absolute highest good, and love God a little bit more. I want you to follow me and to learn from me. I want to show you and teach you how to live from within the reality of God's love. There's nothing I want more than for you to be healed and whole and forgiven and freed. But it won't be easy. The choice is yours. Think about it. I'll be here. Amen.